720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth hanging out with you this afternoon until 3 o'clock. Talking about all kind of things. We're talking about writerly things today a couple times. We're going to be talking about performancey things. We're going to be talking about all kind of good stuff, Chicago-y things throughout. We are honored to have this guest in studio. Cole Lavallee is here, and she is the founder of the Chicago Writers Studio. I cannot wait for you to hear about this, because this is so cool. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Get on up to that microphone. That one's a really shy microphone, so you
Thank
have to get right up.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us today. Well, so tell us about Chicago Writers Studio and how you came to create it.
Well, the Writers Studio is something that I've wanted to do for years. I've always kind of felt as if there was nothing on the South Side to kind of serve writers there. And you write in such isolation that we need community. There wasn't a concrete place for it on the South Side. And so I've been thinking about it and kind of figuring out, how am I going to do this? When am I going to do this? And probably for the last 10 years or so. And I finally said, it's time. I can't
now
wait
or never.
Longer.
We're
now,
doing it.
Now or never, especially because Beverly has had kind of an explosion of kind of the literary arts in the last couple of years. For years, it was kind of just the Beverly Arts Center that was there and serving the community, and it was wonderful, but it almost operated like it was an island. And so, and especially in terms of the literary arts. So in terms of the community around the Beverly Arts Center, I never really saw a place for writers. But now we have, it's the Longwood Writers Guild,
yeah.
Words with Friends, Flow, which is a wonderful writing group in the neighborhood. And then the French Room.
Yeah.
The reading series, it seemed to come out of nowhere. And it's a wonderful series that's not just for storytellers, but for fiction writers. And that was really kind of, you know, what I was looking for, because the city has a lot of poets have a lot of places to go. Storytellers have a lot of places to go, but for fiction writers to kind of just sit and read, and it's a wonderful thing to listen to a writer read from their work. And so that kind of opportunity was missing, and I think Front Room does a good job of fulfilling that.
Definitely. Big fan of that series. Right. That's a great one. And that's a really good point, because we, you know, it seems like when we hear, there's so many things in this city for writers. Mm-hmm. I mean, there, and as you say, it is such an isolating experience to do the writing that we kind of need it. We need to all get together once in a while. And there's stuff, I mean, I think every single night of the week, there's something somewhere in the city. But so often when we hear from fiction writers, they're reading an essay, or they're reading fiction, but it's first person, so it sounds like an essay.
Right.
And that's right. There's just not as big a, you know, Sunday Salon, I think, was a place where there was a lot of fiction for a while. But that is a very good point that there is, you know, space for that.
Right. I was with a group called Vocal, Voices of Chicago Literati. And for 2 years, we fought the good fight in terms of trying to set up a reading for that was kind of based on fiction writers. And it's kind of hard to find them, because they're not used to kind of this type of program, because it's so focused on storytelling. And so we were able to, you know, kind of collect folks along the way in 2 years. But then it's like, okay, now that we have them, what do we do with them? How do we kind of continue to form community and find a place to kind of hang out and, you know, really foster writing? That's not my living room table, because for years it was my living room table. So that's kind of where I got the idea. I wanted the Chicago Writer Studio to be like my, dining room table. To be like my dining room table. And let folks come in and be able to really not just express themselves in their writing, but get feedback and, you know, find some folks that are like them, that are crazy enough to try to write like they are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's so important, and it's such a hard thing to do. It's such a hard thing to ask for, right? When you write, at least when you're doing it right and well, it's so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes to say, okay, read this and tell me what you think, I think you have to be really specific about the kind of feedback you want. Or say, you know, sometimes you need to say, don't worry about the language, just is the structure working? Right. Or you have to say, okay, the structure is locked, I'm not going to change it, I don't care what you say. Tell me about the language, how does it land? Because I think sometimes if we don't ask for the right feedback, that's when we get our feelings hurt. You know, we get a case of the vulnerables and we get all flipped out about it. But that's what leads to people like throwing a book in the drawer and not looking at it for a year, you know.
Right. I've been in those workshops where
it's gutting.
And you're like, how are they going to you want to be with in the car in the drive home, like what are they going to say to themselves? Last week I had a workshop at the Chicago the studio, and it was one of my students' first time workshopping. And I was like, do you need a hug?
Yeah.
She's like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, okay, if you need a hug, let me know.
But good of you to ask, because sometimes you do.
Because sometimes you do, right? And, you know, I try to make sure that we're workshopping with love. But, you know, sometimes it's tough love. And you never know how someone is going to receive that. And I never want anyone to receive criticism and think, I'm not going to write again.
I'm done.
Because that's not what we're here to do. We're here to keep you writing.
Yeah.
And to help you find your voice.
Yeah. So about how many people are involved with Chicago Writers Studio right now?
I have, in terms of, I have about 15 students right now.
Okay.
And I have two other instructors other than myself. So I actually have a course going on right now while I'm here.
Oh,
I'm
as we speak now.
Right. And when we're done, I'm running back to teach another course. So
well, very, very glad that you're here. We're talking with Cole Lavallee, who is the founder of Chicago Writers Studio. You can find out about it at chicagowriterstudio.com. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we are going to continue this conversation all about writing and Chicago and all those good things. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth hanging with you till 3 o'clock. We're talking about all kinds of creative things today. All kinds of things. And right now, we are honored to have Cole Lavallee with us in studio. She's the founder of Chicago Writers Studio. You can find out all about that at chicagowritersstudio.com online. Lots and lots of cool things. And so, Cole, as we were talking before the break a little bit about how Chicago Writers Studio came to be and its role here in the city, which is a very, very important one, tell us about some of the things that that are happening there, kind of the nitty-gritty of it. It sounds like there's both the regular members, like the people that are there all day, every day doing the things, but it sounds like there's classes that lots of people can go to.
Right. There are a lot of different ways that you can take advantage of the Chicago Writers Studio. First, we have classes that are for all levels of writers. If you are kind of just starting out, you have a story that you really want to tell, and you don't know how to tell it, there are courses for you. We have a course, I just finished teaching a course that started, that's going another 2 weeks, but our new sessions are going to start in mid-April. But that's called Writing 101. And that's for folks who, like I just said, who are just new to writing and really know they have a story and want to be able to tell it. And we're here to help you do that. We also have a screenwriting. Shahari Moore, who is an award-winning screenwriter, who is currently hard at work on a documentary about Gwendolyn Brooks, is one of our screenwriting teaching artist.
Oh my gosh, what an amazing resource to have there.
Oh, she's wonderful. Yeah. She's wonderful. And we also have Kim L. Delaney, who is a prolific writer and academic. Mm-hmm. I often have to wrestle her down because she's so busy going to all of these panels and on this study and that study. I'm like, okay.
Right.
We're working on creative work today. But she's wonderful. And coming up in our new sessions that start in April, we're going to have Tara Betts, who's also a wonderful, very talented published poet who is also an academic. She's going to be teaching a workshop on poetry, transforming truth and lies to wonderful poetry.
Wow, that's going to be great.
So we have a lot of different aspects. I also do a short story workshop, and the short story workshop and the novel workshops are for writers who have a little experience, who've been in workshops before, and who have a specific work that they already want to workshop. The other workshops are more generative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have creative writing exercises and all that good stuff. But the short story workshops and the novel workshops are for novelists at all levels and short story writers at all levels who have work and they've kind of been sitting with it or maybe been sending it out and hasn't been getting published. Mm-hmm. And they want other folks to take a look at it.
So you need pretty well-formed.
Pretty well-formed.
Manuscripts there.
Right. For the, you don't have to be finished with your novel, but you have to be, I would say, 50% through it. Okay. And have an idea of how it looks, you know, an outline. If you don't have an outline, we'll work on that with you. But we really want you to have an idea already when you come to the workshops.
My ears are perking up because I have one that my second book I've rewritten 6 times because I don't know how to end it. It just sort of keeps going. I'll go, oh, wait, maybe I'll make it this. I'll do this. So this sounds like
right.
something
so
perhaps I need.
Right. That would be a perfect workshop for you. I didn't mention we also have a finishing your novel class.
Oh, okay.
For folks who, you know, maybe yeah. a couple of chapters through. Or, you know, not quite there yet and are still looking for some ideas in terms of getting that the novel finished. So
also useful.
So whatever level of writing you're at, Chicago Writer Studio has something for you.
I love that. And then what about young writers? What about young people?
Young people, you know, I love the kids, but right now...
We're just going to focus on grown-ups.
We're just focusing on grown-ups. I feel terrible because I've had a few parents reach out to me, and, you know, that's, at this point, that's just not kind of where I'm
Let's
going.
Get the adults under control first.
Right.
We're handful enough.
I'm like, the children, that's somebody else's ministry at this point, right. The children.
Right. Well, you know what? A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking with Kevin Koval from Young Chicago
okay.
Authors, so he will answer to
right.
the kids part.
There you go.
You can just
Perfect.
Stick
Perfect.
With the adults. Everybody's covered here today. It's all good.
Right.
Well, you know what I'm really struck by? Reading about Chicago Writers Studio and the work that you do, there seems to be such a beautiful through line in all your work of the emotional piece and the kind of the believing in the humanness in all of us that really comes through, that's really so lovely, that I think is often overlooked. We think about sometimes it being the emotional part is solitary. We do that by ourselves. But then where we take it when in community, we only talk about the mechanical mm-hmm. and the technical part of writing. And it seems like you've been able to bridge those really beautifully.
I think that's important because you can't really divorce yourself from the emotions of not just creating it, but those characters, because they tend to stay with you. And a lot of folks are writing about their own lives, thinly disguised. They barely change the names, right? And so it's important that we, as we try to help people put those things on the page, that we honor that and we not kind of take the emotion out of that, because you have to deal with that first. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes that blocks the actual writing. I often tell my students that don't let the facts get in the way of the truth, that even though that's something that's very close to you and you've gone through that, you can still tell that story. And just let those facts go, right? Mm-hmm. Let that go, and you can still capture the truth of whatever happened.
Isn't that interesting how we block ourselves creatively like that? With sometimes it's like the one sentence we're not saying is the thing that really sets us free to really tell the rest of the story very
right.
powerfully.
Right.
And I think that's so important to be getting at that and to nurture that in people. That's really lovely.
Oh, thank you.
So what is next for Chicago Writers Studio? What is the future plan and both short term and long term?
Well, my future plan is to actually grow, to get a little bigger in terms of the number of classes. I never want the classes to get too big. I think, you know, between 8 to 10 folks is about all anyone can really handle emotionally.
Even and I think for students, you kind of get lost beyond that.
You do. And there's something about being, you said earlier, that sharing your writing is such a vulnerable place to be, that you really get close with the people that are in your class and your workshop. And that's very difficult if you have 20 folks or 20 writers, because you have to deal with all those different personalities. So I see the studio growing in that way, and in terms of, because I want there to be something for everyone all the time, mm-hmm. right? And I also see it as a place, I have this service now, but I want to expand it in terms of being a hub for the community, mm-hmm. that whether you're taking a class there or not, you can stop by, you can sit down, you can write, you can have a cup of coffee, grab a bagel, really be a studio, a place where writers just come. And we can have readings and present, you know, when folks have new novels, they can come out, and hopefully those novels will be written, finished, or started
with
at the
your
studio,
help. They will be,
right? And just really be a part of the community and reflect the community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it seems like it, you know, it would be a place where so many aspects of the writer life could be nurtured and loved and shown and explored, which is so lovely.
Hopefully that's my goal. I set out to. I think I tweet it somehow. I tweet like 5 times a year, but I think one of the 5 last year was like, I need to find a way where I can read, write, and talk about writing all day, right? And still kind of eat.
Right, sure. That important detail. Right.
Right, because, you know, food, shelter, you know, try to do without it, but I actually need it. And so the studio is a way to do that. You know, I'm creating that life slowly but surely that I can just sit down and get to talk to writers. It's a wonderful thing. I enjoy my Saturday, my Saturdays, because it's full of writers at all phases. And it's a wonderful thing to be a part of that.
Lovely. And so your debut novel, Summer of Cicadas, out in May of this past year. Mm-hmm. What is next for you?
I am currently working on a collection of short stories that is based in Chicago on the South Side in the early 80s, a collection of neighbors on one city block. I'm excited about that.
You got a very big grin as soon as you said that.
I'm excited about it. It's always fun to work on a new project.
Sure.
And that they're short stories. There's something about a novel that just takes over your life in a way that short stories, at least for me, haven't. So I'm enjoying the project.
Excellent. Well, we will look forward to that. Do we have a timeline yet? We don't know.
No.
You've got, you're busy nurturing everyone else.
Right.
But don't lose sight of that, because we want to read it.
Thank you. I won't.
We definitely want to read it. Cole Lovelay, thank you so much for being with us. Again, head to ChicagoWritersStudio.com and you can read all about all the new classes, all the things. You can help her with the vision of it being the place to be for readings and hanging out, writing, nurturing community, all of those good things. I love everything I heard today. This is very, very cool. Thank you for this cool thing that you're doing and making Chicago this just wonderfully rich and diverse literary community. I think it's so lovely. So again, ChicagoWritersStudio.com. Head there. There are new classes in April.
In April.
Okay. So stay tuned. Go to them. Do the things. Finish that book. It's been sitting on your desk for so long. Go finish that book. She'll help you do it. Cole, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We're going to take a little break and get you to news back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
My kind of town, Chicago is. My kind of town.
Now that is perfect bump music to come back from break for sure, because you know what we're talking about right now? It is Chicago's birthday. Chicago, this beautiful, beautiful city, is 180 years old this year, and that's very exciting, and I feel that is celebration worthy. And so thank you, esteemed producer Tom Hush, for pulling up that song, because it's
no problem.
A perfect one.
Exactly.
But you know what? There's a detail in that song that I think we should discuss, and that is Chicago was incorporated as a town 184 years ago.
Correct.
It was incorporated as a city 180 years ago. And in that song, it says town.
Well, then he must be singing about that incorporation.
Way to go, Sinatra.
Stick to New York and Hoboken.
Can you
and
just
all that.
You just stick with New Jersey and New York, thanks. We will take care of Chicago. Thank you very much. But nonetheless, this fine city, which is my chosen home, I have twice moved here, twice chosen this place, because once I temporarily moved away for a project, but I came right back. I could go anywhere I wanted after that, and I came right back.
Can't stay away.
No, and that's exactly how I felt. Even before I had visited this fine, fine city, I was like, I love that city. I want to go there. I want to live there. I want to be there. And then the first time I was here, I was like, yep, This is my place.
This is the one.
And these are my people, and I'm going to live here. So this fine place, but let me tell you what my favorite thing about Chicago is. And if you would like to give us a call and tell us your favorite thing about Chicago, I would love to hear it. 312-981-7200. Mine is this. It is so darn cold here that as soon as it is warm and beautiful, I mean the littlest fraction of warmth and beauty, Chicagoans go outside and live like it is their last day on earth.
Oh, no doubt.
And I think that's so lovely.
Yeah, when we had that pretty brief warm spell, I mean, people were just all over Michigan, shopping, you know, getting their food, doing the whole thing.
I wouldn't even shut my windows. I was so excited about that warm spell. And I was walking around with a, like, you know, with short sleeves. Even when it got a little chilly, I was like, oh, no, I'm going to soak this in. It's like we... It's as if we think there's like a we stock up on it or something.
Yeah, you gotta take what you can get.
The first time that I ever saw people sitting on an outside area of a restaurant in parkas, I was like, there's just a toughness here. This is the great American city. There's a toughness here.
Exactly.
Nowhere else.
Well, it's the city of broad shoulders. You know what I mean?
It is the city of a lot. I mean, I think it's the great American city. There's
truly,
you know, a variety of people doing a variety of things. There's everything here. I also lived in New York City before I lived here, and people often ask me, you know, to compare the two. And I got to be honest, there's no comparison.
Really?
No way.
I have never actually been to New York City. I just imagine that it's like this, but with, you know, the alleys aren't as good and the garbage is in the streets.
There are no alleys.
There are no alleys in New York.
And yes, there is a lot of garbage in the streets, but it's like literally piled there because there's no alley.
There's no alleys.
It's different, though. There's a feeling to it that is very, very different. That when I got here, it's hard to describe what that feeling is. I mean, maybe it's just the Midwest and there's a friendliness or something like that. But I think I have long said it's my favorite city in the world.
And it feels actually older than only 180 years old. It feels like there's so much. It's so rich that,
well,
180 years is like, wow, so much happened in such a relatively short span of time.
Well, we've been keeping track of things since 1673, I suppose, when Marquette and Juliet showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the incorporation papers, that paperwork thing, you know, that detail. Indeed, a lot of stuff has happened. Let's talk about those things. So 1837, incorporated as a city. Things are all official. 1833, though, is when the first newspaper of Chicago, and that was the Chicago Weekly Democrat, was published. Mm. So there was a paper around for 4 years before the town became a city. Then 1847, the fine institution that is the Chicago Tribune, that started up. The first issue was published in 1847. Chicago Board of Trade was the first a year after that. Very, very important. But also, I think it's really interesting to kind of look at some of the other firsts that Chicago is known for. One that I did not know until we started doing research on this, that this fine city is to thank for the remote control.
You're kidding.
1950.
And was that because, is Zenith based here? Or, I think it was it makes sense, though. Like, there's a tech hub, you know? Come up with the clicker here in Chicago.
Well, they say there's strength in admitting when you don't know, and I don't know the answer to that. But nonetheless, the remote control was created here in 1950. It was also one of the first and largest municipalities to require, which is the key word here for is required. I think that's very interesting, to require public art as part of the renovation or construction of municipal buildings.
Really?
That is very, very interesting. Now, we've had a couple of hits and misses on the public art.
No doubt.
Sometimes along the way, I love all public art, but sometimes I look at it and I'm like, I don't get that.
I miss the cows. I miss the painted cows.
The cows were cool.
They were super cool.
Yes. That's Although cool. I'm fine with, there was always, because there was one out here.
Right.
Outside of the Michigan Avenue studio here, there was at the time I was doing a night show, a very late night show on Saturday evenings. And so there were a lot of antics and a lot of photos
involving the cow
that I could do without. There's that.
That's good.
You know, and there's occasionally like someone who would like steal one.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be stealing the cow. That's important. Don't
right.
do that kind of business. Other things, the Ferris wheel made its debut in Chicago at the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition.
Mm-hmm.
And the Navy Pier Ferris wheel, that one is modeled after the original. And also, I did not know this, the game of 16-inch softball was also created here. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
See?
Although it makes sense for the film A League of Their Own, which partially it was filmed in Wrigley Field, and part of it takes place in Wrigley Field. They started softball and baseball as well.
Okay,
have you ever seen the film?
I have many times. There's no crying in baseball.
No.
What is your favorite thing about Chicago? Kessler, I'm going to ask you too.
All right, favorite thing about Chicago. Honestly, the architecture. I've done that architecture tour like 3 times, and I've lived here for 5 years, and it still gets me every single time. It's beautiful. And the way they explain the history of all the buildings, it can't be beat.
That's a good one. Kessler, what about you? What's your favorite thing about Chicago as we are celebrating its 180th birthday?
It's the people, because I've lived here my whole adult life, and I grew up out in the country, sort of. In the area, though, in Crystal Lake.
Yeah.
And I just
I don't know
always
Crystal Lake
wanted...
is country.
It
hey,
was
man.
Back then. I'm from Crystal Lake. What's going on?
This was in the 70s and the 80s, though. It was not, we considered
okay.
it
yeah.
kind of on the outskirts. It's changed a lot.
Yeah.
So I would always love to come here and visit and, yeah, the architecture and stuff. And then when I started to work here in the radio business, then you kind of start to put roots down and you make friends. And, you know, those have become like really meaningful, lifelong friendships. So that is it.
That's a great answer. I think that's so true. And I think there's just such a great influx of people and, you know, so many different neighborhoods yeah. with just so much going. And it's just such a lovely.
Now, you were talking New York. My sister lives in New York. And every time they visit, they're like, we're going downtown. They want to go downtown to Chicago. I said, but you live in New York. They have a downtown. Yeah, but we want to go downtown Chicago.
See.
Let's do the architecture tour. So there's something there, too.
Do you know, I know someone who was on the architecture tour and may or may not, let's say, I was going to say possibly, but let's just say may or may not have been a Tribune employee. And they pointed, the tour guide pointed to this building, to Tribune Tower, and said, no, nobody works in that building anymore. It's just for show. Everybody works at the printing plant over on Chicago and Halsted. And this person who may or may not have been a Tribune employee was like, I work in that building. No. And they were like, no one does. They're like, yeah. No, I do. That's real.
It's real.
They probably got mixed up that the papers aren't printed here. Because it was for many years.
The papers were printed here. You know, my favorite thing is to show people around Tribune Tower. There's so many cool little quirks to this building.
Oh,
one of them is on the 7th floor, there is an auditorium area called Campbell Hall, where there's a lot of events and, you know, manager meetings and PowerPoints.
That's where
and
we have
like
our
that.
Christmas party.
And where we have our awesome Christmas party. However, that was part of WGN TV space. For way back in the day, when the printing press is fired up at night in the lower level 2 of Tribune Tower, the building shook just enough that it was difficult to focus a camera. And so the floor underneath Campbell Hall on the 7th floor, it was picked up and a something like springs and hydraulics sort of floor was put in so that you could kind of float. You could kind of surf the building and you could focus a camera.
It would dampen the vibration.
Yeah. They're now like since, you know, all deflated and crushed and all that. And so you wouldn't know it.
Right.
But it was kind of a like technically that one piece of the 7th floor isn't really attached to the building. Like if we lived in Tornado Alley, it would have long gone off to Oz.
Interesting.
That's some Chicago ingenuity right there.
Yeah.
Put in the springs.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of cool little quirks about Tribune Tower. My favorite spot in Tribune Tower is there is a place in the hallway on a couple different floors where you can look up and see where the tower part and the WGN wing, which was a later addition, you can see exactly where they come together, where they're joined, because it's not sealed. It's like a little bit open and you can kind of see straight up into it, which is very cool. And that on the 31st floor, there is not glass.
Wow. You should consider a career as a tour guide for here. Like,
I would love
side.
To do that. I have
host and then tour guide.
I love to show people around Tribune Tower. It is just such an iconic, beautiful thing. And I will even stop people on the street if they're saying, like, because this happens a lot. I'm sure we've all heard this. The Tribune Tower and the Wrigley Building kind of similar architecture styles. And so people will look at the Tribune Tower and go, oh, I think that's the Wrigley Building. And I'll be like, no, it's the Chicago Tribune Tower. It's home of WGN Radio. It's home of this. And I just like talk their heads off and they're like, okay, we're going. You're a weird lady.
I was just talking to the guard downstairs. There's the map in the lobby made out of circulation dollar bills. Did you know that? It's the map behind the guard's desk. It's a 3D
I didn't know it was dollar bills, though.
It's made out of currency, not like it was not active currency, but It's like millions of dollars
sure.
worth.
Wasn't that cool?
It's very cool.
You learn something every day is what you do. All right. If you would like to call and tell us about your favorite thing about Chicago as we are celebrating the 180th birthday of Chicago this year, please give us a call 312-981-7200. We will get to all your calls and all that good stuff here in just a bit on 720 WG. WGN. It's Amy Guth with you till 3 o'clock. We are talking about it being Chicago's birthday because that is a thing that is totally happening right now. Chicago is 180 years old and we are celebrating the heck out of that right now, talking about all the things we most love about Chicago and the things that Chicago has given to us. Of course, we are praising the remote control, which is the gift from Chicago, 1950. That's a thing that happened. And, you know, we look back, we think about what was going on 180 years ago? What were we doing? What did things cost? Things like that. So we looked that up for you. So the average wage earner was looking about $16 a week at that time, about 180 years ago. Rent was about $4 a week for an average there. A pound of coffee was about 35 cents. A quart of milk was 56 cents. A bag of flour was $1.80. It says a small measure of potatoes was about 17 cents. So however we're defining
it. Flour seems about the same as it is now.
I was going to say $1.80, but a bag of flour.
$3
But a bag of flour.
Maybe that's like a sling over your back.
Yeah, I would say we are defining bag of flour by 2017 standards, and that is the little thing we carry home and put in a Tupperware. I think this is the, throw it over your back and schlep it home kind of deal. And then make a dress out of it if you're my grandma.
The flour or the bag?
The bag. Not the flour. She made a dress out of the flour bag, not the flour. Indeed. Well, so we've been talking about some of our favorite things about Chicago. And I was sharing how my favorite thing is how it gets so darn cold here that as soon as it's warm, we all go live like it is our last day on Earth. And of course, I want to hear from you. 312-981-7200 if you would like to tell me about your favorite thing about Chicago. Hi, Mike. You're on WGN. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
Good afternoon. My favorite thing has got to be a deep dish pizza, and I'm thinking about Super Rosa.
Oh.
On the north side.
Yeah, of course we cannot have a conversation about Chicago without iconic deep dish pizza. Of course. Of course. Well, thank you so much for calling, Mike.
Thank you. And also, I was wanting to mention fishing on the Great Lake Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
You go smelt fishing.
Yeah.
During April.
Definitely. Those are fine Chicago things to do. Thank you so much, Mike.
How much was deep dish pizza in when Chicago was first?
I don't know. We should look into the history of when did deep dish pizza start
being? It was
being...
40s and 50s.
Yeah, I think certainly not 1800 something, but yeah. That's a great call. Hi Brian, you're on WGN. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
Hey, is this Brian?
Yes. Hi, Brian. You're on WGN.
Oh, hi. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
The last caller just took one of my thunders, the smelt fishing. But anyway, the mezzanine level on the outskirts of U.S. Cellular, even though I still call it Comiskey Park.
Ah, my Sox fan friend.
My girlfriend stood on the rail, and I took a picture of her with the Chicago skyline in Lake Michigan. It was a beautiful, beautiful picture.
Oh, isn't that nice? That is a great view. I know exactly where you're talking about. That is a lovely, lovely view. That's a good
one. I wanted to tell you about my smelt fishing, but the guy, he stole my thunder.
He stole your thunder, but you brought other thunder. You brought the Sox thunder, which I appreciate for one for sure. Thank you so much, Brian. Have a great day.
You too, buddy.
All right. So let's see what else is your favorite thing about Chicago. Hi, Josh. You're on WGN.
Hey, how you doing, Amy?
Good. How are you? What's your favorite thing about Chicago?
Well, since we're on a trend right now, my favorite thing is fishing, but it's not the smelt. Smallmouth bass over by the water reclamation plant. When you launch in at 95th and you're watching the sun rise, and then you hit over there and you're throwing crankbaits into 25 foot of water, and you're hitting the harbors, and you're catching 5-pound smallmouth, that's awesome.
That's Chicago. That's your happy place, isn't it?
That is, that's Godland right there.
That's lovely. Lovely. Well, thank you so much for the call, Josh.
Thank you.
Have a good one. All right, we're talking all about the things we love the most about Chicago as we are celebrating Chicago's 180th year as a city. Hi, Ed. You're on WGN. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
Yes, good afternoon. So my favorite thing is on Foster and Central. It's called the American Science Surplus. They have all interesting gadgets, camping, science stuff. It's a great store to take your family to.
I don't know that store.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Oh, Kessler, you know about this store?
Oh, yeah. If you want to get like a little LED or an army hat, they kind of have one of everything.
Well, who knew?
I needed to get speaker wire there, and it was 10 cents a foot.
Oh, my gosh.
Try getting that anywhere else.
Ed, you might have just changed my life a little bit.
Thank you very much. Yes.
That's very cool. Thanks so much for the call. Have a great Saturday.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. All right. And next up, Charlie, you're on WGN. What's your favorite thing about Chicago? Charlie, are you with
us?
Yes. Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. It had a ding before you said my name, so I never heard you. I was going to suggest the water tour.
Yeah.
The architecture water tour.
Yes.
Oh, that is fabulous. I went on that several years ago, and they go by the water tower, and they go by the building. I don't know what building it is, but it's like an upside building. It's smaller at the top than it is. It's smaller at the bottom than it is at the top. It's like an upside-down pyramid. Then I go by the Civic Theater, I think it is, that has the curtains are raised by some ballast tanks in the water that pump water in, and it raises the curtains inside the theater. And they explain everything as you go down the water tour.
Oh, isn't that cool?
I
did not realize that one detail. How interesting. I knew about the positioning of the building was kind of a snub to the Lincoln Center in New York. I knew about that.
Right, yeah.
I knew about that part. Very, very interesting.
There's a big water tank underneath, and that sucks water out of the river, and they use that for raising and lowering the curtains.
That's very cool. I love that. Well,
yeah,
thank you.
Cool.
Thank you for sharing that. I learned something today. Thank you so much.
All right.
Have a good one. All right, we go now to Kathy. Hi, Kathy. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
My favorite thing about Chicago is the variety and number of its radio stations. You can find ethnic stations, music, talk news, agricultural news. And the best thing of all is it has a long tradition of old-time radio programming, which I absolutely love. And it's been on a number of stations. They've had Chuck Shaden on WNIB. They've had shows on WBBM over the years and, of course, WGN. But you go to other parts of the country, and I'm from Long Island, and when I was growing up there, we had a big variety of stations, too. But now, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them have gone off the air, they've consolidated, and Chicago still has that big variety, so you can get anything you want on a Chicago radio station.
That is a great answer. I love that. That's so true. And you know what, Kathy, I wish you could see they're the coolest old pictures lining the halls of the offices of WGN Radio of kind of the early days of the station. They're so cool and so neat and just fascinating pieces of history. So come visit us and we'll show them to you. They're very, very cool.
Well, absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Kathy. Have a great day. All right. We go now to Tom. Hi, Tom. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
I got a few of them. It's kind of funny she said about old-time radio. I got a giggle. I've been listening to Ori and Samuelson forever, so I almost qualify that as old-time radio.
We love him.
12 o'clock show. Anyway, actually, I love the rooftop bars in Chicago. It's becoming more and more popular as of lately. Especially one of my favorites is the Lincoln Hotel, which gives you a view of Lincoln Park, and it's just fabulous. And there's a lot of little tiny places that you never even know about that are really, really cool.
Yeah.
And, see all those. But I know this one's kind of weird and off the beaten path. But if there's a ghost tour that Chicago has, if you take it on the bicycle, it's even better. But, they tell you about all the weird things that have kind of gone on in Chicago. And there's a lot of really wild disasters that have happened in Chicago. They're fascinating, including the Eastland disaster, which is, I understand, it's the largest death toll in maritime history within the boundaries of the United States.
Oh, I didn't realize it held that dubious honor. Yeah. But the Eastland disaster had a couple of firsts to it because it was also the first mass casualty response of the Red Cross of Greater Chicago.
Yeah, so, they act, you know,
Yeah, and there's kind of cool history there, because I think like where Harpo Studio used to be and Excalibur right. nightclub, I think everyone said that that's where, you know, they held the bodies from that disaster. And so a lot of people right, had yeah. ghost stories for there for sure. Yeah.
Well, Oprah was convinced that there were ghosts at Harpo Studios.
I have heard that many, many former Harpo employees have said that very thing to me, that they were like, you do not want to work late by yourself at that place.
Yeah. I mean, they had a major theater, fire that was, I mean, like 500-600 people died yeah. in a theater fire. And then, of course, there's a hotel thing on the south side that's even weirder. I'm surprised they haven't made a movie about that one yet. But, yeah, it's a very cool tour. It's a lot of fun, especially in the summertime. And of course, the rooftop bars, you got to love them.
For sure.
Enjoy.
For sure. Well, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate that very much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
All right, we're going to take a little break and get you to news. And we come back, we are talking with Kevin Koval about his new book and about young Chicago authors and all the cool things that he does right here. Speaking of celebrating the heck out of Chicago, this is a book that does so. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth with you till 3 o'clock. Thanks for being with us today. You know, right before the news, we were talking about all the things we love about Chicago. We were just giving a big old love letter to Chicago and just loving it to bits. And thank you so much to everyone who called in to sing its praises. I could not agree with you more. It is a fine city. Like I said, I've moved here twice. I love it so much. We now are going to keep that Chicago love going. We are joined now by Kevin Koval, who is the writer and editor of many, many things. I'm not even going to list all of the things because there are many of them. Also founder of Louder Than a Bomb, the Chicago Youth Poetry Festival, and artistic director of Young Chicago Authors. Here to talk about your new book, A People's History of Chicago. Thank you for being with us today. And Idris Goodwin is here too, who is a playwright. And the two of you have written a play together, and you're performing tonight, because tonight is this event for this book that's happening at the Harold Washington. Holy moly. Thanks for making time to come here and visit on this big, big book release party day.
No, thank you. Happy birthday, Chicago.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us. Glad Idris flew in town just fresh off a plane to be here. So
love.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah, no, tonight is the launch of A People's History of Chicago, which is my latest book on Haymarket Books. And so tonight at the Harold Washington Library at 5:30, Idris and a whole slew of people who I love and admire are going to be performing and celebrating the Incorporation Day of the city, and also things that they love, and also things that they love about Chicago, and I would say also things that we need to collectively make better in this moment.
There's always something. Indeed. We can love the city, but still...
Yeah, well, that's the nature of being a Chicagoan, I think.
It's true.
You know, Studs Terkel talked about it's Janus Head, and so that we, you know, it is a two-faced kind of city, and I think being someone, we were talking about this just before, is like, you know, even like on Twitter all day, I've just been asking people, well, you know, what do you love about Chicago, and some people are saying things that they love, and they're also saying like, and also, you know, it's like horrific segregation, you know.
Sure.
I mean, and these are things about the city that you know as a Chicagoan, and that you persevere through, and that you know I think collectively hope that we can progressively make better.
Indeed. So tell me about the book.
There's 77 poems in the book spanning 525 years or so of Chicago history. Of course, inspired by the work of historian, author Howard Zinn. When I read Howard's People's History of the United States and America in high school, along with Lerone Bennett Jr.'s Before the Mayflower, History of Black America, those books armed me for the high school classroom to kind of do battle with my teachers who were, you know, pushing this whitewashed Eurocentric mm-hmm. view of history. And so really, ever since hip-hop sent me to the record crates to dig into the samples and then to the library to understand who Chuck D was talking about, I've been a student of history. And so this book is emblematic of my desire to dig into the record, to remix and retell some of the stories of our history that I think we sometimes forget about, and particularly in this moment where Chicago has a great history of working class victories, and especially now as we see what is literally building in front of us, looking out into the streets, we know some of the struggles and fights ahead. And I think we could take solace and be emboldened by this rich history of interracial solidarities, of class-based solidarities to kind of, you know, topple some of what is in front of us.
Yeah, for sure. Tell me about the writing process of that book. Was it, first, how long did it take you? How long did it, when did you first start working on it? But also kind of what challenged you the most about that?
I mean, probably a little while ago. I mean, some of the poems that are oldest in the book are maybe 5, 6, 7 years old. But then the Lannan Foundation, which is, they're folks who have been supporting me and the work of Young Chicago Authors and Lannan Baum and many writers for a long time. I had a residency there in Marfa, Texas, which is in the middle of nowhere.
And Marfa's cool.
Marfa's wild, yeah. And I just had an opportunity to be in a house by myself for a month. And I was writing essentially a book on gentrification. And Nate Marshall, who's one of the editors of the book and the homie and one of the co-editors of the Breakbeat Poets, he'll be performing tonight as well. You know, he was like, you know, you're really focusing on these historic poems. You know, think about writing this people's history book now, and then doing the gentrification book as a follow up. And so I just started to delve into, you know, the research. And I mean, it's a pleasure, and it's also, I mean, it's horrific to look back and to see how we got here. And it's also very empowering in that regard as well, to be able to uncover and retell and share, you know, some of our stories from our rich history.
Certainly. And tell me a bit about the play that the two of you wrote, This Is Modern Art.
The play was based on one of these important Chicago historical moments that Kevin writes about in the book, actually. And it was shortly after they opened the modern wing of the Art Institute of Chicago. This graffiti crew in the middle of a snowstorm threw up a huge, you know, impromptu mural on the side of one of the entrances to the modern wing of the Art Institute. And it very quickly got graffiti blasted down the next morning, but some folks took pictures of it and they, you know, flooded the internet with them. And one of the tags said, "This is modern art." And Kevin, you know, through his various channels within the world of graffiti art, started to kind of piece together, you know, why was this done? What was the attitude behind this? And so we wrote a play basically based off of that incident. And so kind of, you know, some of it's pretty imagined, what happened, but really it became this larger conversation about, like, who does art belong to and who has access and who doesn't. And so Steppenwolf Theater partnered with us. They're a theater for young audiences wing. Shout out Hallie Gordon. And we developed it together. Lisa Portes from DePaul, who teaches at DePaul, directed it. And then it opened and everything exploded.
As things do.
Yeah.
As things do. And so is that part of what we're going to see tonight at the book event, or something else? Or we're not going to say, you just have to show up and find out.
No, I mean, tonight I invited, you know, people that I love and admire. So Idris and Nate will be a part of that. Jamila Woods will be there tonight doing a song of hers from her incredibly beautiful record, Heaven. Yeah. The homie Mick Jenkins will do a song from his new album, The Healing Component. Rick Hogan will be in the building. Alex Kotlowitz, Angela Jackson, one of my mentors, Baba Hakimadabudi, Bill Ayers, you know, one of my former students and the current Youth Poet Laureate of Chicago, Iman Loren. A bunch of folks will be out kind of doing, you know, their own work and also tributing the city of Chicago. And of course, you know, we'll be selling the book brand new. It ships on Haymarket Books. April 11 is the real pub date, but, you know, we have the book in the building tonight, and partnering with the good folks at the Chicago Public Library Foundation in order to do not only this reading, but over the course of the year, about 180 readings in 365 days, one in every neighborhood, in order to, one, you know, basically go on this all-city book tour, but also do this work of building a Voices of a People's History of Chicago archive with the Public Library Foundation, with hopefully folks, you know, at some other, you know, ventures in the city, of course, folks at Young Chicago Authors, to get people to add to this broad narrative of what it means to be a Chicagoan now and in history.
Very, very cool.
I'm basically here to get selfies with all those people, Kevin. I just want to get in as many pictures as possible.
I was going to say, that's about the Chicagoanist party that ever Chicago.
Oh, man,
to
it's
going to
be
right
wild.
There.
Yo, I think Rick Bayless might fall through. I think, like, the 85 Bears might
Bozo
fall
the
through.
Clown. Bozo say. The Clown.
Yo, Harry Carey's ghost going to be in the spot.
Yeah, no doubt.
Man,
no doubt. The goat, actually. There might be goat burgers.
Literal goats.
Yeah, yeah.
If ever there was a place, that is it.
Yep.
It is all happening at the Harold Washington Library. That's 400 South State. It is free. Go to shypublib.org to find out about the event celebrating a people's history of Chicago. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
And you say Shy City, Shy City, Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
Do you think about me? 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth, hanging with you till 3 o'clock today, talking about all the things. And we have been celebrating the heck out of Chicago's birthday. And what better way to do that than to talk with the author of A People's History of Chicago, Kevin Koval. Also with us right now is Idris Goodwin. You guys are doing the most Chicago-y things that ever Chicago to Chicago, and that's for sure. And tonight at the People's History of Chicago launch at the Harold Washington Library, there will be performances, there'll be readings, there'll be all kind of good stuff. I'm going to turn your microphones on so you can actually participate all in right the now. Second part of this conversation.
Hey, shout out to the DJ, by the way.
You know, yeah, esteemed producer yay. Tom Hush yeah. brings Chance, all the good songs. Work, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I have some recordings too, though.
Bring them. We will consider it.
Shout out.
I'm going to just leave this demo with you before I leave.
If you could just, yeah, just put that
my
in.
Emails on there.
We'll be in touch with you. Yeah.
You guys got 8-tracks?
Hey, you familiar with Tumblr? I got Tumblr. MySpace. Yeah. I just got MySpace.
Following.
Gosh.
If you don't mind adding me.
As a friend, that'd be great.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah. I'm trying to get my followers.
My followers right.
I'm about to reach 100. It'll be good.
Easy.
Before the break, Kevin, you mentioned this project that tonight is not the only part of this, of the launch of A People's History of Chicago. There'll be a lot of pieces throughout the year. And you mentioned 180 readings. Tell us a bit more about that, if you would.
Yeah, no, I mean, the plan is to, you know, take a page out of the graffiti writer notebook in some ways and go all city. I've been privileged to be in every neighborhood in Chicago, just in most of the schools. And so the plan is to return to some of the communities and do a reading, at least one in every neighborhood. And as a part of those reading series, have a workshop component in many of them where I'm also, you know, facilitating the work that I do for 20 plus years in the city, trying to create space for other people to also tell their story, fill in the gap. I mean, there's only 77 poems in my book, and it was intentional to leave open space for many, many, many people to contribute to this notion of a mm-hmm. people's history. Part of Howard Zinn's educational project was to create this book, A People's History in the United States, and then subsequently have the educational project be Voices of a People's History, which was original texts and people over the course of this American project resisting and contributing and adding and pushing the country to be more and better. And so similarly, I want to create a text and an archive in perpetuity that contains voices of a people's history of the city. And so that's part of the project over the course of the year. Some of it will culminate March 4th, 2018 at the Metro. Salutes to the good homie Joe Shanahan. And we will convene again on Chicago's birthday next year with a voice of people's history Chicago, which will be me, but, you know, in conversation with many others that I meet along the way, as well as Chicago personalities. You know, maybe we'll get you up there reading Jane Addams' work. I'm just saying. I mean, I've had worse ideas. Before. Boom! There you go. See,
or DeBrat,
or DeBrat. Yeah, yeah. Maybe a mashup.
A little
mashup.
Little
Jane Addams. Brat. Yeah.
Brat Adams.
I kind of love that. Let's do this. Great. And are you willing to share a poem with us today?
Would love to.
Please do.
This is about one of those working class victories. I think that we really can take note of and continue to, you know, work towards in this moment. This is called Republic Windows Workers Sit In, December 5th, 2008. Organizing began with whispers in the break room, a tavern after punch clock. When the company comes to close, the workers will not leave. For 6 days, capitalism gets its ass kicked. The workers united will never be defeated. They refuse to be refuse. Boss man could care less. They sit like Buddhas, bodies on the line in lawn chairs with coolers and hot aluminum wrapped tamales. The company thought they slick, opened a non-unionized shop in Red Oak, Iowa under the name Echo, and the poems write themselves. Echoes for the republic for which it stands. The workers sit. The workers are the best poets. 5 years from now, we'll take over the whole joint, fire the CEO, rename the company, new era, build a worker-owned co-op. On this day, capitalism lost.
Nice. Beautifully done. Thanks. Thank you so, so much. The event is the launch of A People's History of Chicago. You just heard a poem from that book. Lots and lots of plans throughout the year, but that's tonight at 6 or 6:30?
5:30.
5:30. Yeah. Just kidding. Yeah. None of the above. No, no, no. 5:30. None of the things you just said.
6:30 East Coast time, but we only recognize Central Standard.
it's the gold standard is what it is. 5:30 p.m. tonight at Harold Washington Library. Again, that's at 400 South State. It is free. That's shypublib.org if you would like to find out a little bit more. But thank you both so much for being here, Kevin Koval and Idris Goodwin, thank you so much.
Thanks
thank
for having
you.
Us.
And have fun tonight doing
yeah,
all the
out,
things.
Come out at least to the after party, Chicago Athletic Association, 9 p.m., DJ King Marie and Odd Couple.
Loud. All the things. What does one wear to such a thing? You, immediately, I'm like, what?
Yeah, you got it. You're already doing
high
it.
Do you. High pressure of like the most Chicago-y thing to ever happen. Like, I feel like I need to make a dress out of the Chicago flag or something yeah, to yeah. really bring
yeah,
it. That's what I need
and
to
show up in mics. That's it.
I'm going to go home and sew. These guys are going to go do their thing. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth with you till 3 o'clock when we turn things over to the gentleman from the beat to talk about all the sports things, all the sports as they do. But still, lots to talk about here this afternoon on the show. Joining us now by phone, we have Kurt Chang and Lily Mooney from the Neo-Futurist Chicago Performance Group. And thank you so much for joining us today and sharing part of your Saturday. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Thanks for being with us. I know you guys have a lot going on. Tell us a bit about Neo-Futurists and in particular the new weekly performance that you are launching.
Yeah, so the Neo-Futurists, we are a theater company that has been performing in Chicago, Illinois, since December 2nd, 1988, as well as we have sister companies in New York and San Francisco. New York has been doing the show for doing Neo-Futurist work for a little over 10 years, and San Francisco is a baby of about 3 years. And we perform a weekly show every Friday, Saturday night at 11:30 and Sunday at 7. And that show, that work that we make is a assembly of 2-minute plays, and we're experts at writing very small plays that we perform in a fast period of time. We used to perform a show called Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, and then as of last night, we started performing a show called The Infinite Wrench, which is a similar format where we perform many multifaceted 2-minute plays in a constrained amount of minutes. And last night was our kickoff of this work that has been a staple of Chicago theater for almost 3 decades.
And when you say that you're an expert in doing short plays, you're really not kidding, because we're looking at almost 10,000, something like 9,800 and more short plays that Neo-Futurist has performed in the almost 3 decades of its existence.
Yes. So Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind was a show where we performed 30 plays in 60 minutes. And that had been going on for 28 years. And then starting this year, we began to make similar work like that, that changes every single week. And that will be in the form of Infinite Wrench. And we are on route to reaching our 10,000 world premiere count since 1988.
No small feat at all. Congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment. And so, Lily, I would direct this at you. Tell us a bit about Infinite Wrench in particular and what that is all about from your point of view as a performer.
Sure. The Infinite Wrench developed out of an inspiration to start evolving the way that the plays are performed for the audience. So it's still a very experimental show. In addition to seeing a show where the work is new every week and the performers change, you know, from month to month and over the course of the year, now inside the Infinite Wrench, you can also see the way the plays arrive to the audience change in different ways. The show last night involved plays that were color-coded, and so the audience picked a color that they rooted for, and they were trying to get all the plays of a certain color called first. But that's just one way of a more competitive way of delivering those plays. So it has to do also with creating a big challenge for the performers who are sharing their plays, and different varieties of almost games that the audience gets to play with the performers to get through all of the art in the show. So it's highly, highly interactive, maybe even more so now than I've ever experienced it.
That sounds a bit chaotic backstage. What is that rehearsal and preparation process like?
We don't have a backstage. We're on the entire time. We're on stage with the other performers and the audience as well. But it is like the process that we have to make that work is a quick, like, one rehearsal that we pick this work that we write every single week, this new work and different work. And then we spend the time between that rehearsal and the first show on Friday memorizing and making last tweaks before we throw it up in front of an audience. So yes, it is a chaotic mess, but that is what the audiences have been expecting from us for a really long time, and the reason that we like to do it, the reason that the ensemble sticks around in the company for so long.
Certainly.
If I could add, I think the thing that makes the show unique and our company very unique is we're not just experts in performing this work or short plays. I would say our process has developed performers who are experts at embracing chaos and failure, and we all sort of think on our feet and include the audience in everything that happens, because everything is meant to be as honest as possible. So you're sort of on a roller coaster ride with us, and that's part of the fun of the performance.
Sounds fascinating, a little terrifying, but mostly fascinating. And so do you come from this experimental theater background, Lily, or was this a stretch for you as a performer?
I actually had more experience as an improviser, and I had done some sketch comedy, so I was already interested in short work as well as long-form playwriting. But I was really captivated by Too Much Light when I saw it, and neo-futurism as I got to know the aesthetic, because it was such a refreshing way to communicate with an audience. So I think it's a different way of thinking on my feet that's invigorating in a way that nothing else I've found has been.
Certainly. Kurt, I would direct this to you as artistic director and a performer, but in your artistic director, wearing your artistic director hat for this in particular of Neo-Futurists, what is your vision for Infinite Wrench as it rolls along and builds? Is it another iconic run like Too Much Light, or do you see it taking a different direction and doing something very different?
The most similar thing to the work and the way that we've been doing it for that amount of time at the ensemble, active and alumni that built the show, is that that repeating schedule every single week, because that is a vital schedule to the mission of our theater in order to speak to the now and deliver for an audience, for a theater audience that is always hungry for work that is speaking to the present day. So that will remain incredibly consistent. And as far as like my vision for the show, for the Infinite Wrench, my vision is the ensemble's vision. And the ensemble is changing the way that show is performed every single week. So a big part of where that title comes from, the Infinite Wrench, is the fact that the show is always dramatically shifting every single week, and we'll continue to do so. And we might find a ground where we find like a very, very consistent ritual of the stuff that's around the plays that we make. But mostly what we have now is a show that basically there's the plays and there's the transitions between the plays. And now the transitions, which make like, I think that's a big part of what the audience like grasps onto and attaches to is the way that this theater is brought to them in a way that doesn't exist in other theaters. And that process, that technique, those transitions, those will be fresh, new, and exciting for a really long time. And that's the goal right now, at least for this year. And who knows, maybe we'll like make like one really sweet gimmick. That audience is just like eat up.
Yeah, they can't get enough of them. Well, I'm glad you brought up the audience experience, because I too have seen Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind. And it is a very different, if you're used to going to see a play, or if you're or even going to see an improvised show, it's a very, very different experience. For those who have not experienced Neo-Futurist, how would you describe that or set expectation for the audience of what they're about to experience by attending?
They're going to see many plays perform under a time constraint. So if you go see an improvised show, you're seeing people make scenes and characters up on the spot. With Neo-Futurist work, you're watching predetermined written work performed to a task. So that either that's racing a clock, or that is competing against your other audience members. Maybe there's like a quantifying factor to the plays that exist there, like a certain amount of plays that get performed before the team of your audience. That is like the aesthetic or the sensation that you're getting when you come see the show. But the thing that really makes us drive the Neo-Futurist is our aesthetic, which is a way of doing our work, which is nonfiction and honest and true to our lives and true to the moment that happened. Lily, I don't know if you have other thoughts.
I think the honesty is a big part of it. The kind of connection the audience has with us as performers is a little bit different. I said before, they're sort of like on the roller coaster with us. They also, at times, are at the center of a play or are telling us what to do or are receiving instructions. So unlike a lot of shows where suspension of disbelief is in play and you sort of escape into the story of the show, this is a lot of short stories or fast moments that are all about waking the entire room up, which, you know, ironically happens in the middle of the night. But that's part of the kind of like magical ritual of the whole thing. The fast pace is also about connecting quickly and directly and honestly. And the spirit of the show is constant experimentation. So that element of risk is a big part of what makes it exciting.
Indeed. I think you're really encapsulating it really well, talking about kind of the urgency and the truth that comes out of that urgency. It's a very different feeling to be in that audience, but it's very, very cool. And what time are the shows?
The shows are, for Infinite Wrench, it's Fridays and Saturdays at 11:30. Tickets are available up front, half the tickets always. And then the others are available if you wait in line as soon as possible. There's a big line that we form outside of Ashland Foster. And then Sundays at 7 o'clock.
Sundays at 7 o'clock, Friday and Saturday at 11:30. You can find out more at neofuturist.org, or you can call 773-878-4557. interesting thing at the door, right? Tickets are $9 plus you roll a single die, and that's going to determine the rest of it. So essentially, your ticket's going to be $10 to $15, depending on what you roll. So you want to do that. You can reserve an advance ticket and then get a cash rollback after you roll that die when you get there. Advance tickets are $20 with a $1 to $6 rollback. But again, head to neofuturist.org. Kurt Chang and Lily Mooney, thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody, head out. Go see this new production, The Infinite Wrench. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Amy.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, and break a leg. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we come back more praise of Chicago. If you did not get through the first time and want to tell us about something you super love about Chicago as we are celebrating Chicago's 180th birthday today, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. A blessed night. Come back to Chicago, city of 720 WGN. It, of course, is Chicago's birthday. Chicago is 180 years old. You look good for 180 years. We still got things to do, of course. Lots of things to fix and mend and heal in this city, as with anywhere. But it is a fine place, worthy of celebration, indeed. And we have been doing that today on the program. And of course, I want to hear from you about what you love most about Chicago. 312-981-7200. Still room for a couple of calls before we turn things over to the gentlemen from The Beat, Mark Carmen and Harry Tynowitz at 3 o'clock. But let us talk to Bob. Hi, Bob. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
How you doing? Love Lincoln Park,
yes.
Michigan Avenue, bike riding along the lakefront all the way down to Soldier Field. There's a great restaurant on Michigan Avenue that has a jazz trio every night called Bandera near Nordstrom and the river. And I grew up in Lincoln Park and will be moving back to the city after many, many years.
Oh, excellent. Are you in the suburbs now?
Yeah. Live in Inverness.
All right.
We've been here for many, many years, and but our kids are down in the city. At least two of our kids are in the city, and we're there all the time.
So you might as well live here.
Absolutely.
I love it, and I love that you mentioned Bandera. That's, of course, right here by Tribune Tower, so that is a frequent haunt. So perhaps we will cross paths one day in there, Bob.
Maybe.
Maybe.
We love to sit right at the window. Usually we are able to get a table right near, you know, the large windows that face Michigan Avenue.
Yes. You know what? One of the first times I was ever in that place, it was snowing outside and the musicians were playing this beautiful kind of mellow jazz. It was just such a lovely kind of very Chicago scene. That's a good one. But I also must commend your choice of the lakefront trail. That is a wonderful one that I love how the minute it's warm enough, we're all out there. Even if we haven't run in months, we're like, I'm just going to be out in the sun. Soak
absolutely.
It all up.
That's a great drive, or ride, I should say.
Yeah, it's a beautiful one. Very, very beautiful one. Well, thanks so much for the call, Bob.
You're welcome, Amy.
Have a good one. All
you
right.
Too.
So, again, if you want to give us a call, 312-981-7200, and talk a little bit about what you most love about Chicago. You know what, esteemed producer Tom Hush, I was quite shocked by how many people called earlier in praise of Chicago's fishing. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I did not know that we had such a fishing scene, but I guess it's huge.
And then I mentioned that to our guests that we had in studio, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's a thing.
Well, get the rod. Let's go.
I know. I didn't know about all the fishing here in Chicago, but I've certainly been out on a boat. Summer before last, I learned how to sail, which was just kind of one of those things, like the opportunity presented itself. And I was like, sure, I'll learn that. And I can't say that I'm good at it. And I certainly would not single-handedly attempt to be on a sailboat, but it was interesting. It's good hard work pulling all those ropes and fighting the wind and all that, but what a beautiful view when you're out there. Once you get to a place where you can stop for a minute, no matter what kind of watercraft you're on, just turn around and look at the beautiful skyline from the lake is such a beautiful gift to do. Even if you're just on the water taxi, that's a gorgeous thing to do. That's so, so lovely. And I think sometimes we think about the water taxis here being like a tourist thing, but no, no, be on them, go on them, do the things, because that is so lovely and you get such beautiful, beautiful views.
That's
from
what I always tell
from the water.
Who are visiting from out of town. What should I do? I said, do the water. It's like $5.
Yeah, get on the water.
Tower. I was here. Here's a good one. So I met one of my musical heroes, this woman, Carla Bley. She's 80, jazz composer.
Okay.
And I interviewed her daughter, who's a fellow harmonica player. And so I got to meet Carla, who's I really love. And she hadn't been here in 25 years.
Wow.
Because she plays in Europe a lot.
Okay.
And I said, well, what'd you think? What'd you think of? She goes, we are a big fan. Like we have, and she could, Carla goes everywhere, you know, Europe, Asia with her band. And she's just like, wow, I've not been here in so long. This city's great. So I'm with Carla.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. You know, and I think saying, you know, as you were saying with water in particular, I set out to kayak the entire Chicago River a couple of years ago. And I did it. It took me a summer and a half to do it because I just did it in quick bursts. But it was so lovely. And I forever have changed my perception of, you know, looking up at like these big monolith buildings look so different when you're in a tiny little kayak on the water, for sure. Let's talk to Deborah. Hi, Deborah. You're on WGN. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
Hi. It may not sound flashy, but I love the geographical safety of Chicago because we hardly ever have any tornadoes.
Oh, that's a good point. Right. We are relatively, other than that snow, we don't see a lot of extreme stuff like that.
That's true.
That's a very, very good point.
And I've heard that there's nothing preventing that. We could have a tornado just like anybody.
That's true. And we could also have an earthquake because we're right over the New Madrid fault line. But it's not too likely.
Right.
We'll go with that.
We're relatively safe here, indeed. Are you a native Chicagoan, Deborah?
Yes, I am.
Lovely. I am not a native Chicagoan, but I got here as soon as I could. Indeed.
That's good.
Well, thanks so much for the call. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. You know, funny, she mentioned that the earthquake thing came up because I woke up at 5:55 this morning with my building shaking. And I looked at my phone right away and I was like, what's happening? And I was trying to look at news outlets and say, what's happening? What's going on? I spoke to a neighbor in a different building who had no idea, who did not feel like anything was shaking. So not an earthquake, but maybe an earthquake just under my one building.
Could have been some water pipes, maybe.
I don't know.
Building settling.
There was construction across the street a few months ago, and they were doing some stuff with pipes and kind of got to drill under the street a little bit. And I could feel when they were working on stuff. I could kind of feel that during the construction. But this was an other level. I could hear my dishes rattle. It was that much. I have no idea what happened. And I tweeted something about it. I was like, anybody? No one has replied to my tweet.
It wasn't a dream.
It was not a dream. No, I was definitely awake because I definitely sent the tweet. So there's that. Hi, Tony. You're on WGN. Hi. What is your favorite thing about Chicago?
I love going to Wrigley Field, sitting on the left field side of the upper deck, the lower portion, the 400 portion, mm-hmm. during the Air and Water Show weekend. So you got a baseball game going on right in front of you on the most beautiful ballpark in the United States, and planes just completely buzzing the lakefront. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. That is pretty cool. The only thing I fret about for the Air and Water Show is you see like people out walking their dogs, and the poor dogs look so stressed out hearing all that noise. But it is very cool that we do that. You know, it's right there for everyone to see. That's a good one. That's a wonderful vision to hold on to for summer. Thank you so much for the call, Tony. Have a great day. We have to wrap up all of this birthday celebration praise of our fine city, celebrating its 180th birthday right now. And we're going to turn things over to Mark Carmen and Harry Tynowitz from The Beat, and they're going to talk about all sorts of things.